No.
79, put it down.
Right behind.
Page 79.
Yeah.
Shmot, Vayera, Chamishim.
What are you doing?
Shmot. You're in Shmot. You're not in Vayera.
Oh, okay. I'm still not woken up. 79?
79.
All right, give the man a coffee, see if he wakes up.
I got a coffee, it's not helping.
All right, fifth reading. We're talking about the frogs now. So the second plague was frogs. One frog came out of the water and multiplied many, many, many times. And the frogs ended up just about everywhere and anywhere, and the Pharaoh is going out of his mind. And that's where the fifth reading opens up. It opens up with the Pharaoh who summons Moshe and he says, okay, talk to your God and get these frogs away from my people. I'll send your people. Get your frogs away from my people. Moshe says to the Pharaoh, flatter yourself. When exactly do you want them to disappear? And the Pharaoh says, how's about tomorrow afternoon? Thinking that he's going to catch Moshe Rabbeinu on a time. Moshe says, okay. As you said, by tomorrow they will disappear. And then Moshe Rabbeinu finishes off, you'll recognize, ki ein kashem elekeinu, that there is none like God, our God. All right. And with this, the fifth reading opens. Chapter 8, verse 7. V'soru hatzfardim mimcha umibotecha. Moshe Rabbeinu says, the frogs will depart from you, umibatecha, from your homes, umiavadecha, from your servants, umiamecha, and from your nation, rak b'ya'ir tishovarna, but they will remain only in the river. Why will they remain in the river? So it seems that they will remain in the river in order to serve as a reminder of this plague. Does it mean that they will remain in the river live frogs or dead frogs? How exactly is this thing going to unfold? So we're going to find out in a few moments. The bottom line is that Rak Be'er Tisha'arna earlier seems to say that Moshe Rabbeinu said, you say that you control the Nile River. That's what the Pharaoh said. That was his domain. The Nile was their god. And he controlled the God. It's a good position to be in. This is what we worship and I control him. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you'll see that God controls the Nile. The Nile, the frogs will leave dry land, but they won't leave the Nile River. That's how the Mincha Belula explained. So the Mor of Hashemesh has something very interesting about this. He says that in antiquity, where people were able to with the spiritual forces that create reality as we know it, also known as kishuf or black magic, or I don't know what it is. I don't know how to do it, thank God. And nothing to do with this business, but once upon a time, it was like technology of today, which would be quite outlandish if you would tell somebody about today's technology. In antiquity, they would have a hard time believing it. Tell them to have a little piece of plastic and you put it in front of you and you can talk to the whole wide world. And they're like, right. So today, we don't know how to marshal the spiritual forces, but once upon a time they did, and in a dark way, doing so is called kishuf. But the kishuf had no control over water. You had to be out of the water in order to manipulate reality. And Moshe Rabbeinu shows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he is not a black magic practitioner, and that this is God, and that's why you'll see he emphasizes what happens on dry land and what happens in the water. And finally, the Meshech Chachma says this. When people would play with the nuclear physics, the spiritual nuclear physics, inducing some kind of change, it was only a temporary change. It was a superficial, like a virtual reality thing. But invariably, whatever change you could bring about by using this kind of spiritual force, or dark spiritual forces, would eventually expire. And then things would return to what they originally were. And Moshe Rabbeinu shows how the plague of the frogs does not end even when the plague concludes. and that the remnants of the frogs will remain in the river. Anyway, these are the various ways of understanding the notion of Rak Vayor Tisha'arna. Vayetze Moshe, and Moshe goes out, Vi'arein Me'im Parei, from before Parei, Vayitzak Moshe Al Hashem. Moshe cries out to God. Now, I want to tell you, this is the first time we hear of Moshe crying out. We heard about Moshe talking to God. We heard about him complaining to God. We even heard about him praying to God. We never heard about him crying to God. But here it says, Vayitzak, he cries out. Al Dvar HaTzfardim, with regard to these frogs. And Ashasham Lupare, which got a place for the Pharaoh. So the obvious question is, why was Moshe Rabbeinu crying out to Hashem in this fashion? So firstly, Rashi tells us, because he said L'machar, because this is going to be tomorrow, so Vayetze, it says indeed that they went out from before the Pharaoh to tell you that Miyad, immediately after they left the Pharaoh, they began to pray, Sheyikarsu L'machar, that this plague should be removed as of tomorrow. But the question remains, what forced Moshe to cry out? It seems that crying is a prayer. That's how Rashi seems to take it. But why did he pray with such intensity? So the Ibn Ezra suggests, even though Rashi says it's just prayer, and he prayed right away, Ibn Ezra suggests that the terminology, the verbiage of tzaka, means a more intense form of prayer. And why did he have to pray with greater intensity? Because Moshe Rabbeinu just made a promise, and it was not a promise that God told him to make. He said to the Pari, Hispoir Eli. Flatter me, he said. When exactly do you want it to go away? And then Moshe Rabbeinu said, uh-oh. I just made a promise. I hope I can keep this promise. So he got really nervous here and anxiously cried out to God, Rabbeinu Shalalem, I just did this for you. I didn't say I'm controlling. I said, you're in control. Please make sure that it disappears exactly at the time when the Pharaoh said it should disappear. And the Abarbanel said that Moshe Rabbeinu's fear was that the Makkah would last a full 7 days. Because the Makkah, each Makkah used to last 7 full days. They would get a warning for 3 weeks, and then the Makkah would last a week. And then the warnings would start again. And that's how the 9 plagues, or 10 plagues really, unfolded during the course of 10 months. Starting off in Tammuz, only ending in Nisan. Because the plague would be, there would be a warning for the plague, then the plague would come. The only plague that didn't last a full week is the plague of the firstborn. That happened instantaneously. Interestingly, we hear about 6 days of darkness and not a seventh. Where was the seventh day? So our sages tell us that on the night before the Reed Sea crossed, the same darkness returned for the Mitzrayim. And that was the seventh day of darkness. So there was always 7 days. And Moshe Rabbeinu was told by God it's going to be 7 days. And now the Pharaoh said, I want him to be gone tomorrow. That means he's ending the 7 days prematurely. So he got really nervous, says Abarbanel. He didn't know if he had the power to do this. And so he began to pray to Hashem, cry out to Hashem. That's the notion of Vayitzak. Finally, the Sepharno says that the reason that he had to cry out was because Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to do something which God didn't really say. He wanted the Tzfardim to die on dry earth, but he didn't necessarily want them to die in the river. And here we have something happening. It's not either the Tzfardim go or they don't go. And here, some Tzfardim do go, and some Tzfardim don't go. Some frogs do, some don't. So it's not a simple matter. This is a complicated matter. And because it's complicated, that's why there was the Vayitzak, that's why there was the crying out. Here's the good news. Vayas Hashem kedvar Moshe. God did exactly as Moshe had said. Vayamuso hatzfardim. The frogs all died. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of frogs. Min habotim, min hachatzedes, min hasadis, from the homes, from the courtyards, and from the fields. And the Torah says, Vayitzburu esam chamorim, chamorim. They had these heaps of frogs, piled up heaps of dead frogs. Vativa sha'aretz, and the earth stank. Rotting frogs all over the place. Not a pleasant situation. All right. So this is really the only time we hear of a business of some frogs dying, frogs remaining in the river, and frogs thinking. The maka was supposed to end, so the frogs should be gone. The locust didn't stick around. How come the frogs did? And specifically, how come we say rak bayir tisha'arna that it will remain in the river? So the Rebbe once spoke about this, and he said something very interesting about the business of the frogs and the froggy fallout. Let's go to page Kuf Nun Aleph. Yesh lishoil, we could ask, madua dafka b'makas tzvardeya, why was it specifically when it came to the plague of the frogs, hishir HaKadosh Baruch Hu zecher l'maka, that there was a remnant, something that was left behind, a residual effect. The Torah clearly spells it out. B'ya'ur tisha'arna, it'll remain in the river. And this was even after the maka concluded. So we hear about this business of the frogs remaining. And the interesting thing is that the Torah says it not once, but twice. Twice. We twice emphasize this detail of the frogs remaining after the plague is over. Benigud l'shar ha-makas, this is in sharp contrast to all of the other plagues. Shalinisher mehem zecher la'achar mikain. There was no remnants whatsoever. When the plague came, it was with full intensity. And when it was gone, it was gone. There were no louse left after the lice went. There were no wild animals left. There weren't even any locusts left. In fact, Rashi tells us that the locusts that were pickled, yes, I know it sounds kind of disgusting, but they used to eat locusts and they would pickle the locusts. You have a jar of pickles, they have a jar of locusts. And it was the only thing they could do. They said they lost all of the vegetation. At least we'll eat pickled locusts. Even the locust disappeared, the pickled locust, the dead locust flew away too. Nothing was left. And here, the frogs are left. And the Torah emphasizes it twice. So the Rebbe said that this is likely because that the Sibah L'kach, the reason for this is Kshura, B'tafkida HaMiyuchad Shel Makas Tzvardeya, with a specific purpose of this plague. What was the goal of the frogs? What did Hashem want to demonstrate to the Egyptians? Tafkido Shel Makas Tzvardeya, Lehoisa Rak Ligrim Tzar V'Yesurim L'Mitzrayim. This was not simply a way to torment the Egyptians for their well-deserved evil and bad treatment of the Jewish people, so now they deserve to be treated badly. And they were treated badly. The frogs drove them absolutely crazy. There were frogs that were in their stomach, there were frogs in their bed, there were frogs in their bread. Frogs were everywhere. It was an unbelievable infestation. However, the purpose of this was not simply to strike at the Egyptians with something fearful, but rather, Gam lahakais es hayor. Here, God sought to strike the river. And it's important for us to understand that the river served ka'aveda zara l'mitzrayim. This served as the Egyptian idol. Now, in all parts of the world at that time, there were various forms of famine. And when the famine hit, people were in big trouble. This would be perhaps like today, there are times when there's economic boom and times when there's recessions and even collapses and sometimes depressions. And this is the way it is. Every good business person knows that he has to prepare for a rainy day, and people have strategies to try to maximize good times when the economy is up and to try to survive the times when the economy is down. This is it's a simple fact that it's never been the case since we started keeping records that the economy is always booming. And there are always times of feasting and famine. So because you have feast and famine, and because in ancient times this could actually spell the difference in life and death, what caused economic collapse in antiquity? The lack of rainfall. This is a very real issue. It didn't rain. We ended up in big trouble. There's an entire tractate in the Talmud called Masechet Tanit, which is focused primarily on what do we do when it doesn't rain? So we, as Jewish people, believe everything comes from Hashem, and if it doesn't rain, we're in big trouble. And there's a whole series of fasts that are undertaken, and special prayers that are offered that it should rain, so people should survive. People used to literally die of starvation. This is the first time in history that there are more people dying of overeating than starvation. Once upon a time, people literally died of starvation. But Egypt, as a rule, was untouched by all this. What was the difference in Egypt and the rest of the Middle East? The Nile River. Eretz Yisrael hardly has any river. I mean, now the Kinneret's doing pretty good, but that's because it's been a lot of rain in Israel lately, and this is an unusual deluge of rain. In Eretz Yisrael, it says, it's the kind of land, Limitar HaShamayim Tishter. It's a land of hills, it's a land of valleys, and it's a land of rain. Not that it rains that much, but it's a land that desperately needs rain. And as it says, that Eretz Yisrael is a place where you always have to raise your eyes heavenward because you need the rain. And if it doesn't rain, we'll be in trouble. But in Mitzrayim, they never looked up to the heavens. Where'd they look to? They looked down to the ground, looked at the Nile River. This has really nothing to do with what I'm talking about now, but I want to share it with you anyway. John Voight, the famous Hollywood actor, once told me, he said that he was at this Hasidic wedding. I happened to have been at that wedding also. I was in Los Angeles then. I didn't know John Voight then. And he said, some older Hasid came over to him, and he said, how come their marriage will last and yours didn't? And Mr. Voight said, I don't know. And the Chassid said, I'll tell you why. Because they look up to heaven first and then go to the chuppah. You look down and went to the altar. And he said to me, the man is right. The man is right. And actually, yes, the couple is married. Baruch Hashem, married off the children. I know them. It's almost 30 years now. But the point is, in Eretz Yisrael, there's this natural predisposition of the circumstances that causes you to raise your eyes heavenward. This is a good thing from a Torah perspective, from a religious perspective, from a people relationship with God perspective. But in Mitzrayim, they didn't have that. In Mitzrayim, they looked down, they said, our sustenance comes from the Nile River, to the point that they actually deified the Nile River. They worshiped the Nile River. They said, life for us comes from the Nile Delta. That's where we live from. That's our God. This is not different than people today worshiping money, prosperity, materiality. People worship it. People are ready to kill for it. They live for it. It's the single most important defining factor or ingredient in their life. So Hashem wants to strike at the source of sustenance, at the source of goodness, at the source of prosperity from Mitzrayim, which is the Nile River. Until now, the Nile has been the source of their cornucopia. It's where they got good things from. And all of a sudden, what came out of the Nile? These monstrous frogs. So Makazu Limdes Parai, this plague taught the Pharaoh a lesson. Einu yachol istamech al koichei va'itzmasei ashal yair. He cannot rely on the strength, on the power of the river. Shekein hayair atzmei olul lefanes kenegdei al pitzivei Hashem. Because the river can turn against him. The river that they thought was their guarantee can turn against him by the commandment of Hashem. As we saw, Kifishat Sfardim Bo, it says that the frogs came. Well, where did they come from? Min Hayaur, from the very source of their material prosperity, that's where the monster came from. A big monster frog came out of there, and the rest was history. As the Torah clearly says, Visharatz Hayaur Tsfardim, the river swarmed with frogs, and they caused tremendous damage. Vehezikul Apari Ulu Mitzrayim. Now, you could say to me, hey, this is not special about the frogs. What happened when the river turned into blood? The first plague already demonstrated this. The plague of blood, the Makas Dam. So the thing is this. The river turned into something which was useless. It was flowing plasma instead of H2O. But it wasn't something which directly caused them damage. Just they had a river, and they didn't have a river anymore. They had water, life-elixing hydration, and now it was a source of death. All they could get from there was blood. Blood is a sign of death. But it wasn't actually a source of something that brought them evil, something that brought them harm. Here, the river, the H2O, the water, not the water change, the river as it was, and rivers have amphibious creatures like frogs in them. And now the river was the source of these monsters, these frogs that came to destroy life in Egypt. So it's a whole new level. It's not just that the river itself disappeared. It's that the river itself, as it had been worshipped up until this point, now became a source of the opposite of blessing. And the Rebbe maintained that this was something that didn't happen and then faded, but rather stayed on kedei lahazkir zayis l'parei tamid, to remind the Pharaoh as he would move forward in his re-education. Gam la'acharei shetachleif ha'maka atzma, even after the maka would come to an end. Hishir HaKadosh Baruch Hu etzat tzfardim bi'er. It seems like these monster frogs were not typically found in the Nile River. They were a unique kind of monster frog. And the monster frogs continued to live on. And they continued to be a source of fright for the Egyptians, because they remembered what happened last time when the monster frogs came out of the river. The monster frogs lived in the river now. The Pharaoh used to bathe daily in the river. Now he had friends in the river with him. Every time he came to the river, every time they looked at the river, what did they see? They saw the monster frogs that had invaded their land. They were thankfully staying in the river, not leaving, but they could see them. And in doing so, the Pharaoh would remember, he cannot place his trust in the Nile. See, on the currency of ancient Egypt, it didn't say in God we trust, it said in the Nile we trust. I'm just joking. Ela all of the hisyore, the point is that he should now be fearful of Nei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is, here we see that the Makkah, as Rashi tells us, the Makkahs were staged one thing after the next in order to slowly dismantle the Pharaoh and slowly change his attitude so that in the end he would say, Hashem HaTzadik V'ani HaRasha. He would acknowledge God's presence. He wouldn't say, I never heard of God. He said, God is right. I am wrong. And whatever you ask for, in the end, I am ready to do. So that's the lesson of the monster frogs.